Why did the Indians decide to occupy Alcatraz to begin with?
Indians decided to occupy Alcatraz primarily on the basis of an 1860, I think it was 1860 treaty drawn with the Sioux, which stated that all lands taken by the federal government and unused would revert back to the Indians. And this was federal land. It was no longer being used federally. And in the face of selling it to private interests, the Indians felt that it should revert back to them.
So Indians from all of the United States went there to live?
Mm-hmm. Not especially to live, but merely to occupy. It was never regarded as a home. It was regarded as an occupation.
How long did they plan on staying?
As long as it was necessary. Or until they were physically carried off, and in the end they were physically carried off.
Okay, the occupation lasted from about fall of 1969 until June of 1971.
Mm-hmm.
When were you there?
I was there in the fall of 69.
So you went over when it first began?
Within 2 weeks.
What types of things were happening when you went over?
Pretty much planning of strategies. At that point, when I reached the island, the blockade had been down for the first day after having been up, after the first people went on. Generally, it was kind of trying to sort out any supply routes, take care of the education of the children that were there, staying warm, staying, you know, healthy, that sort of thing. It was in the primary planning stages at that point.
Was there any real pre-planning to going over?
I don't think so. I think it was pretty much an impulse. I think the Indians had known perhaps a week that the federal government was thinking of selling it to an individual company which had planned to create something out there that would have been basically private. You know, wouldn't have been an open sort of a thing. The Indians proposed that it be a cultural center with an Indian influence.
Who got the people together to go out there?
They mostly came at that time from Berkeley, UC Berkeley.
There's a large Indian population there?
Yeah, throughout the South Bay, North Bay area. San Francisco Bay has a second population in California, California being the largest in the United States of Indians.
Mm-hmm. Why did you personally go?
I don't know, the fire of youth, maybe. I was working in Palo Alto at that time and living in San Mateo. And my cousin and I said, hey, look what's going on up there. And we're California Indians, why don't we go and get in on this? And so we did.
How did you get over to the island?
On a boat. The first time we tried to get over, the blockades were still up. Again, we made it to the San Francisco Indian Center, presented ourselves, bag and baggage, virtually, and said, we want to go out to the island. And they looked at us and they said, ho, 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 ho. You know, we've got to go across the bay, and you got to go to the no-name bar in Sausalito, and then you look for this guy named, whoever, what his name was, and then you tell him what you want to do, and he'll run you over, you know, after the night comes, you know, you're over in a boat. So we went over to the bar, and we couldn't find the guy. And so we went back to the Indian Center. By that time, it was night, and presented ourselves bag and baggage again, and were put to work sorting old clothes.
At the Indian Center?
Yes, at the Indian Center. One of the people there, his name was Jeff, with a G-E-O-F-F. He was very distinct about that. Took us home with him and presented us to his young wife, who hated our guys. And we slept on his floor that night. The next morning, we went back to the Indian Center, and the blockades were down. So they took us right out to Fisherman's Wharf, and we climbed on a boat that was a little bitty boat with maybe two other people. And I met Cadillac, the boat driver. Cadillac is some kind of a person boy. I saw him again years later, but he drove us out there telling us all that we were in for. And bag and baggage, we arrived. They dumped us on the east side of the island where the boarding was at that point.
Cadillac was not an Indian.
Yeah, Cadillac was.
Oh, it wasn't
Indian. Strange one of the street people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, San Francisco street people. Yeah.
How many people were there when you got there?
Oh, gee, I don't know exactly. There were probably, at that time, quite a few. I'd say 150, 175.
And at the height of the occupation?
That was probably the height of the occupation at that point.
What was the mood of the people?
Generally, it was like a big camp out. It was a lot of fun. People thought, you know, finally, making a mark and making the U.S. realize that there were still Indians, because most of us had come from rather ignorant backgrounds as far as Indians were concerned. We lived, for California Indians, in cities and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The tribal people were coming from reservations all over, and they had been their own bad place, you know, a reservation. So it was a kind of a slap back at the establishment, perhaps, you know, a certain jubilance along with that, you know, here we're doing this, you know, that kind of a thing.
How did you eat?
For a time, and while I was there, food was being shipped over gratis from several of the restaurants in Girard Valley Square. We also accepted donations through the Indian Center in San Francisco, boxes of canned goods and that sort of thing. And the water was being supplied by the boatload once a week by Buffy St. Marie.
Mm-hmm.
She paid for the water to be shipped to us.
Oh, okay. These people left their homes and their jobs for an indefinite period of time?
Yes, I did. Everybody I knew who was out there did. There were some people who did not hold regular jobs, but at that time I did, and I dropped it. I told them, tell them I'm on Alcatraz. I told my mother to call my boss and say I'm on Alcatraz, you know, forget about my coming back.
How long did you plan on staying when you went over?
As long as I could. I was at that point at loose ends and felt that as long as there was something there, I would stay.
So you felt good about what was happening
mm-hmm.
to you?
Yes, I did.
Okay. What types of things did you do while you were there?
My cousin and I found ourselves, first we got a tour. Daniel Bomberry took us around the entire prison, showed us the Birdman of Alcatraz's cell, which is a double cell, not big by any means. We saw the cell where Al Capone stayed and, you know, walked in and out of the cell block. And we made a little visit to the medic. There was a medical student or someone attached to Stanford Medical Center came in about once or twice a week to check everybody to see that they were still healthy. And that day, this person was there. So we ran by and saw the little kids and got a tour of the place, basically. Found a place to stay. We stayed in the attic of the warden's house, which is no longer there. Next to the fireplace, fortunately, because it radiated, you know, the chimney for the fireplace radiated
mm-hmm.
warmth into our little room. So we were not too bad off. Our duty was basically, they said, well, do you know anything about kids? You know, you want to make a school? And so we said, all right. And we went to, I guess it was a warehouse or near the boiler room. There was a big stack on the east side, you know, big tall smokestack type thing with a little building underneath it, and downstairs in that building it was fairly, there was a lot of glass left in it,
mm-hmm.
so it was fairly warm, but the room was really tacky, and we spent about 3 days sweeping and cleaning just to prepare for the children.
Who determined who did what?
I don't know. Generally, you just kind of walked over and said, look, is there anything to be done? And somebody who seemed to be coordinating would say, I think they need you over there. Why don't you go and see? And you trot yourself over there and see if you needed food needed preparing or anything else. I guess we got in at a good time because we didn't have to prepare much food. Not much, anyway.
So there wasn't any general hostility about doing things you didn't want to
no,
do?
No. Everybody kind of hung in there and pulled.
And you said you started school with children. How many children were there?
There were probably maybe 12, 13.
And did they stay throughout the whole occupation, you know?
Yeah, I think most of them did. Richard Oakes's daughter, in fact, died on the island, or was mortally wounded on the island.
I understand that was one of the contentions of the United States government, was the island was not safe.
Uh-huh.
Did you see that or feel that?
No, not really. Every place that we went, it was a little tacky, but probably no worse than anything that's been abandoned for quite a long time. I didn't see that it was unsafe. Our little place in the attic of the wardens was firm. You know, the building was nice. It was a lot nicer, bigger than the place I live now. It was once nice.
Were there any type of ceremonial things going on while you were there?
There was a lot of singing. There was this really interesting... Oh, the TV cameras came out, too. That's shortly after we got there, because the island was open at that point. You could reach it by boat again. The TV cameras came out, and some guy, I remember, he looked white to me. I don't know who he was, but he had a full mustache and a beard and his kind of freaky hair. And he was busy doing a styrofoam totem pole for the cameras.
A styrofoam?
Styrofoam totem pole. I couldn't believe it. I thought, guy, you know, anything for a little publicity. I don't know. I have no idea. But here he was, and the ships were flying off, and he was banging away, and the cameras were moving, you know, so I don't know. There was a lot of social dance, you know, every once in a while in the evening sometimes. They'd have somebody bring in a drum, and they do a little playing, singing, and, you know, that sort of thing. But as for religious, I don't think anyone was sweating or anything else at that time.
Mm-hmm. You talked about preparing the food. Did everybody eat together? Mm-hmm. It was a communal type thing?
Yeah, it was like a giant buffet. You know? So there was perhaps 3 hours of preparation involved, and then you set it all out, and everybody came by and scooped up what they wanted.
Did you eat native foods? Or?
Oh, we ate whatever came across on the boat.
I read that one of the things they wanted to do was set up a Native American food concession type thing on the island eventually.
Yeah, that would be nice.
But it wasn't going in the process.
Not at that time.
What types of problems came up?
Primarily the cold and the fog. I think that was the major problem at that time. It was no longer a shooting war by this couple of weeks after the beginning. It was a shooting war to begin with. But by that time, the Indians were pretty well entrenched, and they knew the island, and the police had been out, shore patrol or whoever it was that came out after them, and they couldn't find them. They couldn't catch them.
Mm-hmm.
So it was accepted that the Indians were there as long as they couldn't be caught. So nobody was even trying at that point. I guess the police were regrouping. I don't know.
The shooting war went on between the first people to arrive and the police?
Yeah.
Or?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Was there any more harassment from the police while you were there?
Not while I was there. No. We saw the boat go around a lot of times, and they'd be looking at us with binoculars, and you know, it was kind of threatening, but we kind of leaned over the cliffs and watched them, too. So they never boarded the island while I was there.
Food wasn't a real problem because you had...
No, there seemed to be abundance. It was bland. We got a lot of fresh veggies and stuff like that. Carrots and potatoes and corn and, you know, whatever else happened to be coming over on the boat.
That somebody sent over a turkey.
Yes. That, I think, was a... okay, they'd been there since through Thanksgiving, I guess, and... we didn't get there for Thanksgiving, but I understand that this restaurant sent over a full course turkey, baked turkey dinner, you know, several turkeys and everything. Well, somebody else thinking, I guess that these were, you know, the Native American folks, was going to send them a real live turkey. And sure enough, this real live turkey must have been about 3.5 feet tall, you know, with a good sizable turkey. With a red head and the big feathers and, you know, all the big yellow feet like they walk around on. And the turkey stayed where the food was prepared generally. It was in an exercise yard that was all walled in and had steps along the side that you could sit on, you know, big steps, deep steps. And when we got there and we were preparing, you know, for the dinner, there was this turkey that used to run around and grab food. It was a very predatory turkey. I think most everybody was afraid of it. It was fierce, you know, a big, mean turkey, and it would come and steal your food as it liked. He was fast. I don't know if they ate it later, but not while we were there. The turkey was a mascot, I guess.
What kind of good things happened while you were there, besides the turkey?
I don't know if anything good actually came at that point. I think a sense, perhaps, of Indians as all, like the name that they gave themselves, Indians of all tribes, as an organization, because there were Indians of all tribes there. There were all kinds of people from all different areas, all over the United States. And that kind of unity probably hadn't happened before. I think that was a very positive thing.
Mm-hmm. I read that it said if you're not Indian, don't bother to come over.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any kind of checking to see if you were, or?
We ran into a little problem when we hit the Indian Center, primarily because both my cousin and I at that time were cosmetologists. And when you are in beauty school or working on hair, you've got to have your hair done too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And Indians don't do their hair like that. You know, we had our bleach streaks and, you know, all this other short, curly, you know. It was very unreservation. So they kind of looked askance at us for a while. But, again, you can trot out your family members and get irate enough to bowl anybody over. And so we did get out there. Nobody gave us any problem on the island.
What were the basic goals of occupying Alcatraz?
I think probably the basic goals were to have it first returned to the Indians for Indian purposes.
Mm-hmm.
It would be the first instance of turning back any land to the Indians. They didn't get Alcatraz, but following Alcatraz, they did get land for DQU, and they were trying most recently in the past couple of years to get some land near here for an Indian hospital. There is none in California. So. I think it started that ball rolling, basically. If it wasn't as successful there, then it did open the eyes of the government and the populace to see that Indians were standing on treaty rights.
Mm-hmm. What is DQU?
DQU is Diganoita Quetzalcoatl University.
Okay. Now that you said it, what is it?
It's a bicultural, Mexican-American and American Indian University near Davis.
Mm-hmm.
I think they share many of the same faculty.
And this wasn't done until after the occupation?
Right. Okay. It required another occupation, incidentally.
Another occupation where?
At the site of the university. It was an abandoned military establishment. And so they sat in there until the government did give it to them.
Has there been... There was the acquisition of Alcatraz, and the one you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Have there been other attempts to occupy other abandoned federal properties, do you know?
Not to those extents. I believe in some smaller amounts, yes, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, I think the government is tired now. This is low, nearly 10 years ago. You know, and they've been hearing about Indians for quite a while, and I think the government is tired of its gadfly. You know, they're kind of brushing them away now. You know, if there's no public sentiment now.
Was there any government people that were for the occupation of Quinoa?
I don't think so. I don't know of anyone.
What type of reaction did the government have at the time?
Government turned and looked the other way. They were regarding it as a civil disturbance within San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people that they dealt with there were the San Francisco police, you know, the Harbor Patrol, you know, those kinds of people.
So the U.S. government didn't come in and stop on you or whatever?
No, they didn't.
Okay. Why'd you leave?
I got sick. The cold got to me. Boy, it was cold, too. It was really cold. I don't know if it was a general disease or not, but I really got sick. Matter of fact, by the time I did get home, I had to lay up for about a week and a half with a fever and, mm-hmm. you know, the coughing and the head and everything. So I was rather ill. I don't think the little doctor could have taken care of us. You know, we were sick.
Did your cousin come home with you then?
Yeah, she came home with me.
Was it hard getting off the island?
Mm-mm. No, we just packed up our bag and baggage and presented ourselves to the boat, and the boat Cadillac says, you've given up.
No, you were
snorting at him and telling him we're going home. So we went home. Nobody felt bad about it. No. People came and went after that, pretty much on whatever they wished.
Did you ever feel somebody would have liked to have gone back?
I would have liked to, probably. When I got back home, my mother told me that my boss, whom I had told to basically, you know, hit the wall, you know, he had been calling meanwhile, asking if I was back, and that he wanted me to help for the Christmas season. So I did go back to work for about 3 more weeks, and then I quit there and came here to go to school.
Okay. Thank you.